Thursday morning in New York City. It's PRN.FM. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight. Thanks so much for listening today and every day. Got a lot of texts and tweets already. People calling about some subject matter from last week that we weren't able to get to. And we have a packed show today, so we're going to dive right into it. To give you the number before we get to ensconce, it's 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Well, we've all experienced this, whether we're on the receiving end or as a bystander, being in a New York City area or a major city street or a side street. Who knows where it could be, anywhere in USA or for our international listeners, anywhere on a side street where you are, and it could sound just like this.
How are you doing today?
Wow.
That's not good.
Wow.
What's up, beautiful? Have a good day.
Hey, what's up, girl? How you doing?
Somebody's acknowledging you. She said, thank you.
Oh, bless you.
Hey, baby.
Hey, beautiful.
How are you this morning?
Have a nice evening.
Nice. Damn.
God bless. Sexy American Eagle.
How are you doing today?
So that's audio that you would typically hear around a city street. Obviously, that was done in New York City. And the reason why we play that for you, there's a video that went viral and was produced by an organization called Holla Back. And we have a guest here this morning who we're going to meet momentarily. The purpose of this video is to experience what a woman feels. And it's not only about women. We're going to get to different persons and what they experience as well. On a street for a 10-hour period. So that's a very condensed version of what this person experienced. And they walk around again for 10 hours, and there's a video of it. And a lot of the audio isn't that clear, so there's text on the screen. We just tried to play you some of the stuff that's a little bit more audible, like the, damn, that's kind of my favorite. And it sounds like the New York City police car is actually whistling at the girl, but it probably not. It's just coincidence in background. But the point is that there's a lot of street harassment, and an organization was formed a few years ago to kind of curb that. And from Holla Back is Deputy Director Debjani Roy, and she's my guest. Debjani, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much.
You guys are in the limelight today.
Oh, yes. We're getting a lot of press. We didn't expect this video to go viral.
But you're happy that you did.
We're happy that it did because it's opening up the conversation around a really important issue that is often dismissed. We're happy that people are watching it and that it's gone. Well, people around the world are watching it. So we're getting a lot of feedback globally and internationally. So it's sparking a global conversation, not just U.S.
And that's great because you have affiliates internationally. And Holla Back is a movement to end street harassment, as I mentioned, powered by a network of local activists around the world.
Exactly. We train leaders around the world to organize online and on the ground. We're training our 11th class right now. We're based in 79 locations in 26 countries and function in 14 different languages. And we are training about 18 more sites that are going to be launched in December. So it is a global movement. We are contacted by people who are just interested in raising the issue in their neighborhood and in their communities. And we train them and give them the resources to get going.
What was the inception of Holla Back?
Holla Back was founded in 2005 by a group of seven individuals, four women and three men. They were just hanging out one night on a rooftop when one of the women in the group was harassed on her way to the gathering. She shared her story of harassment, and then all the other women in the group started sharing their stories of harassment. It was story after story, verbal harassment, being followed, groped, touched, brushed, public exposure and masturbation. And the men in the group were absolutely appalled. They had no idea.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, they had no idea. So one of the guys in the group said to the women, "You live in a completely different city than we do. And so let's do something about it."
Fantastic. Just like that, at an organic level on a rooftop with some bottles of wine open, some drinks, and an unfortunate situation on the way to the gathering.
Exactly. It was beer. But
very cool. Okay. Well, we got to kind of glamorize it a little bit.
But something else happened at this time, and it was these sort of two factors that contributed to the start of Holla Back. A woman by the name of Tao Nguyen was riding the New York City subway in 2005 when a man across from her started masturbating. It was an empty train, and she thought, okay, I'll take a picture of him with her new cell phone camera. and I'll take it to the police and report it. And so she took the photo, went to the police, and the police said, we can't help you. There's nothing we can do about it. So she uploaded it onto Flickr, which was new at the time. And the story, the picture, and the narrative went viral and landed on the cover of the Daily News. And so the founders of Hollaback saw this happening and thought, hey, why don't we set up a platform where people can share their stories and upload photographs?
And how does that work? Because talk about, Debjani, the method in terms of ceasing this action on the streets. What is your protocol?
We are really a story-sharing platform. We have the blogging platform. We have an app, so you could report on the go. The whole purpose is to give people who are harassed a space to talk about their experience, because it's something that's often experienced in isolation. And you have to deal with the feelings. You have to deal with the whole adrenaline rush afterwards.
It's a good form of therapy.
Yeah, it's complete. That's exactly what it's for. It's also to read other people's stories, and it's a tool for empathy. We're trying to build empathy around the issue and to really get a sense of what it's like to walk around wherever you are in the world in the shoes of that person who's sharing their story. And so hopefully by reading these stories, people will begin to understand that there are a lot of impacts and it's not just a fleeting thing.
The co-founder's name is Emily May, and it's pretty interesting when I read about her that Gloria Steinem recently was asked, you know, who do you think in the 2000s is a woman, a real juggernaut, you know? And she said Emily May is someone who's on a street representing women of today. Wow, that's pretty impressive.
That is pretty impressive. I think Emily herself would say that this is about the site leaders around the world.
Sure.
It's about all the people who are
but
organizing.
But the nucleus is important.
The nucleus is our headquarters in Brooklyn, sure. But the momentum is happening because of all of these people around the world. Over 400 site leaders we've trained who are raising the profile of this issue in their communities, who are also speaking to press, who are also going into the schools and talking to their legislators. It's definitely, we call it decentralized leadership. It's definitely not one person. It is multiple people. And that's what it'll take to change the narrative on this issue.
Debjani, what do you say to women or men, a lot of LGBT, gay, bisexual, you name it, are on a receiving end as well. What do you say to people who are at the receiving end of these catcalls, if you wish to call them catcalls, or just unwanted solicitations or comments, declaration statements? What to do besides, obviously, the app? Is there a way, and is it per situation, that you can respond? I know you've had some instances, if you want to share one or not,
sure,
or some other instances where people have said something that really worked or obviously said something that really incited this situation.
So there are so many different ways to respond, and it's really up to the individual to determine that. First and foremost, safety. If it's nighttime and you're walking down the street and you're harassed by a few people, you probably don't want to say anything. You just want to keep moving, right? If you are someone who identifies as LGBTQ, and if you're being targeted for that with homophobic or hateful slurs, you might not want to respond either, because there is a huge fear of escalation. We've seen so many cases of trans women of color who have been very violently attacked, and also have been murdered because things escalated so quickly. So sometimes it is the best thing to walk on. But if you do feel like speaking up, we suggest that you be firm, succinct in your message, say something quickly like, that's disrespectful, I don't appreciate it, leave me alone, something that's easy to, you know, grasp. Keep moving, make eye contact, take up some physical space, and just be short with it, because often harassers think that if you start talking to them, that it's an opening for a conversation.
And that they're gaining ground.
Like, oh, I got their attention, or maybe, you know, I can keep it going. Mm-hmm. But sometimes if you respond, and I've experienced this myself, it turns sour really quick. Even if you give that succinct message and keep talking and you say, leave me alone, I don't appreciate it, people can respond very angrily and start calling you all sorts of names. Like, do a complete 180, which is what happened to me on my way to work not that long ago, where a guy was walking alongside me and he was saying, hey, beautiful, and I was actually listening to music. And I just took my headphones out and I said, please leave me alone, I'm just trying to get to work. And he called me effing B and stuck up and all of those things. And he was yelling in my face. And then I was like, that is verbal harassment. I put my hand up. You need to, like, step back. And he just kept walking, but he was mumbling under his breath. And so I think a lot of people experience something similar, that they're afraid if they speak up that it'll turn into something worse. And I know that that is a common fear in the LGBTQ community.
And I think there's a very important point to stress here, that this is not socioeconomic based. This is not regionally based. This happens to, or the violators are people at construction sites, at the corner bodega, just walking down the street, men in suits.
Absolutely.
I've seen probably more men in suits with a few drinks in them acting more immature than the offender maybe possibly that you just mentioned.
Yeah, harassers come from all different backgrounds, economically, racially, religious backgrounds, whatever it may be. Harassers come in all forms. The fact that we're organized globally is a true testament to that fact. You know, obviously, harassers in South America are going to be South American, in India are going to be Indian, and in the UK and in the US are going to come from all different backgrounds, especially in the more diverse metropolises like New York City. I was born in the UK. My parents are from India. I grew up in the United States. I've spent enough time in all places, and I've experienced harassment everywhere I've been, and this is very common, and I've talked to many people who are international people, and also on travels. You know, I've been traveled all throughout Europe. I've been to South America. You know, every place I've been to, I've been harassed, and it hasn't only been based on my gender. There's also the racial factor, right? I'm targeted for my racial identity as well, and when we're looking at harassment, we have to look at the intersection of all these identities. You know, we're not just harassed for a singular thing. It's always a number of things.
A multitude.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I find fascinating about you personally, because, I mean, your background, your experience with issues including domestic violence, street harassment, sexual assault, mm-hmm. forced marriage, honor-based violence, sexual trafficking, forced prostitution, widow's rights, and immigration rights.
Yeah, I've been working in this field for 15 years, even longer maybe. I started off as a student activist, and then I was in the UK for a bit, and I got involved in all sorts of work, especially within my community, the South Asian community. So I've worked in domestic violence and forced marriage, when people are married without consent, married off by family members and relatives. Also widows' rights, which is something that we don't talk a lot about, how widows are neglected and how they're treated afterwards in many parts of the world. So yeah, I've been doing this work for a while, but street harassment was the issue that I was really attracted to, because it's something that's very commonly experienced. Everyone can relate to it. Everyone has a brother, a sister, brother, even mother, cousin, friend, girlfriend, whatever, who's been harassed. Everyone can relate to it individually or through someone that they know.
There's two things I'd like to share with you. Number one, I was attacked, and this goes to a different level. This is a physical assault by about 15 or 18 individuals years ago. So that lives with me when I'm around certain areas and or large groups of people that are walking towards me. Yeah. But aside from that, I've also been called, when I lived in Hoboken, New Jersey, which is right across the river for our international listeners, that is a fairly affluent town with a very poor population as well. And you walk past a certain group who are obviously maybe on subsidies or state living or things of that nature, and they yell things of color, you know, hey, whitey, you know, hey, yuppie, hey, you fag, or whatever the case may be. And so, you know, there have been instances where I'm like, wow, so this is what it's like to be on a receiving end. And I've also worked on construction sites when I was in college, and sometimes occasionally when a good friend of mine has a big company, and when they're on a deadline, he's like, Mark, can you give me a hand? So I've been in a city sitting next to a number of guys, and they do this. And they're also good guys, but they feel empowered. And I think it's almost like the when in Rome thing. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I never took part in it, but it was a very interesting sociological experiment for me to just see this dynamic unravel. Because, as you said before, it's all about power. And I think it makes them feel good. And individuals who may not have the most fulfilling life, that if they can possibly talk to someone who they find appealing or maybe what they perceive as out of their class, to have a one-on-one with them, even though obviously it's fleeting and they may be told to go somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there is a pack mentality involved. I think a lot of people learn to harass when they're amongst a group of other men, and they're forced to prove a sense of masculinity. People will call them out, like, why aren't you picking up that person, or why aren't you interested, or let's try it out. It's definitely something that people learn en masse. And I think something that really testifies to that fact is the situation of sexual assault on college campuses today, and how a lot of men, young men, the brightest of the bunch, are responsible for these sorts of forms of violence and discrimination. And it's something that's learned and supported by groups of people. It's sure. institutionalized.
Absolutely. As you well know, you speak at schools, and I shared with you before we started today, I mean, I speak at schools nationally, and what's in the press nowadays, even within teams, within our own cult, so to speak.
Absolutely.
The supposed to be the synergistic brotherhood, and that's totally, totally and utterly violated.
Yeah, absolutely. We were actually involved in co-organizing that Carry That Weight campaign that happened yesterday. And we were at Columbia University.
Fantastic.
Standing alongside, you know, all the students who have been sexually
assaulted. Explain to our listeners a little bit about that.
It's a campaign that was organized around the action of Emma Salkowitz, who is a student at Columbia University who was sexually assaulted on campus, and this semester started walking around campus with her mattress to represent the assault that she faced, and also to explain to people that this is something that the assault is something that she carries with her every day in her life. And the mattress represents the physical burden of that, and the emotional burden, and the mental burden of all of those things. And I certainly don't want to speak for her.
Sure,
but
of course.
We all helped carry mattresses on Columbia University's campus yesterday to, in solidarity with her, and also all of the survivors. There are so many
depiction
of us.
Yeah. Could you imagine being on the board or the administration of Columbia? They must have been like rattled. Oh my God, how are we going to make this go away? What can we do?
Yeah, I'm waiting to
see. We're
going
to ban mattresses from the campus. Everyone has to sleep in sleeping bags.
No more mattresses. Yeah.
What a great visual.
Absolutely.
To get the attention and to make such a powerful statement.
It was amazing. There were many mattresses out, and there were messages written on the mattresses, and people had signed them, and all these amazing survivors, students, spoke up about the issue of how it's affected them on very real terms.
Deb Johnny, I know your time is very, very short, and you have to get in a cab and head downtown. But lastly, this video went viral, and it's on your website, ihollerback.org, ihollerback.org. And just quickly tell me about how long was the actual video, 2 or 3 minutes?
It's about 2 minutes.
2 minutes, and there's how many comments or...
Well, in
roughly?
The video itself, I'm not sure, but over the course of 10 hours, it was over 100 harassment. Yeah.
What did you, quickly, two last questions. What did you think would be the outcome, and what was the outcome, and how were you shocked?
We didn't expect it to be viewed by, I think right now it's 11 million or so, or maybe 15. I'm not sure exactly. It's hard to keep track. But, you know, we're a small staff of 3 people, and we are managing a huge influx of interest on this issue. But we are so glad that it has sparked an international conversation around this issue.
More about the video itself, the content. Were you sparked and are surprised, taken aback by anything?
Oh,
obviously, you've been so ensconced in this field and so much of your upbringing. So was there anything that you said, oh, wow. Wow, I've never predicted that or
experienced
that.
I think the frequency was really surprising. The man who was walking alongside her for 5 minutes was very shocking and scary because he wasn't even saying anything. He was just walking alongside her. And then there was another guy who was walking alongside her with a friend of his who was saying things like, "What if I gave you my number, would you talk to me? What am I, ugly?" It's just the persistence that I do know firsthand, but it's always... insane to see someone else go through
it. I almost started to feel a little bad for those two. The one person you started to speak about, I thought maybe had challenges.
Yeah,
possibly.
I'm not
still,
really sure.
Yeah.
But I really am trying to understand what compels people to push that far or to even speak out in that way to begin with.
It's a great conversation that you broach. And also being a parent, when you have children, daughters, sons, when they come to New York City, they have to be trained and educated in this.
Absolutely. Although it does happen in all parts of the country.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, obviously we're broadcasting from the heart of the world here.
But yeah, it's something to talk to your kids about for sure, unfortunately. But it's something very important to talk about. And that's why we were going out to the schools and talking to people today.
And finally, yes. And finally, if you would like someone from Hollaback at your organization and or to be a leader, what would they do to do this?
They just have to contact us and let us know they want to start a site in their location. If there's already a site there, join up with that group. And of course, look out for all the events we'll be hosting. We have stuff coming up in the new year.
Debjani Roy, thank you so much, and great work. And again, if you want to see this video, it's on ihollaback.org. Thank you so much for your time. Kick some butt at the school you're going to speak to. Insight's going to return, and we're going to find out if Chris Christie's rumored cancellation of Halloween is fact or scary fiction. Ah, the beloved governor of New Jersey, Chris Christie. Such a jolly chap, isn't he? Yeah, heart of gold, especially for all the Sandy victims. Anniversary yesterday. And what does he say to one heckler? You know, I understand hecklers can be pain in the asses. But he says, sit down and shut up! Because Chris Christie is that sensitive of a person. And that's why he would make a perfect president, among many other fine qualities that he possesses. But can you believe that? This guy's got no tact whatsoever. You know, there's so many different ways to handle something that goes wrong within a press conference, within a town hall meeting, a gathering. But obviously you're dealing with people who are grief-stricken still from Hurricane Sandy that left people and has still left people homeless, etc. Obviously, we read about the debacles of the companies that deal with the aftermath of storms. And there's actually a great article in the New York Times today about how these companies in New Orleans and in New Jersey both were hired to handle such a disaster. And they both got fired. There's no competition in the field. So they don't have to do such a stellar job. Anyway, I digress. So Chris Christie was also rumored, and this was from a website, I think it was Courant.com or something of that nature. They did a great job of fictionalizing that Governor Chris Christie, the title read, Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey, cancels Halloween due to Ebola quarantine. So I saw this. I said, well, no, it's got to be fiction because I saw it on Facebook. So you know what, you take everything with Facebook with a grain of salt. So, of course, I Googled it and read on the state website that that's not the case. But, you know, I would not put it past him. So for a fleeting moment, I said to myself, wow, this guy thinks so much of himself. He's such a big bully and so inflated his ego that I would not doubt it, because certainly that wouldn't be a worthy justification to cancel Halloween unless there'd be something for him to really gain, like all the chalk in New Jersey. Okay. We're going to make a segue here to something that it's not so funny at all. It's a serious topic, and I shared an experience I had with you last week at a talk at a school in New Jersey, Colts Neck High School. And I had a great experience, an amazing audience. I spoke for approximately 75 minutes to a challenged population, and they were phenomenal. Very receptive, very patient, very inquisitive, and very attentive. And their questions during the Q&A were very impressive. So I felt like they really got my message when I left there. I always feel very positive. I'd say 9 times out of 10 when I leave an event, because I feel that my message gets understood, and it feels to me like it's going to be incorporated, even if it's the smallest nugget or morsel of information that they can tuck away in their tiny little brains, depending on how old they are, not measuring the size of their brains, of course, that could empower them or could, you know, keep them out of trouble in some instance or way. So that's how I felt last week when I left Colts Neck High School. Then the following day or two, I heard some really sad and unfortunate news that a student had died. And the first thing that came to my mind is suicide, because I'm kind of surrounded in that world with things of that nature. And so I immediately investigated, and it did not say suicide. So long story short, I found out that it certainly wasn't a suicide. They don't know the why or how the child died, but I guess that'll be released, but it's not suicide. But then when I spoke to the person who hired me, because I reached out to them, because I found out through someone else that this person attended my talk. So then I felt like I felt very personal connection. How could I not? So when I was speaking to this individual, they said, yes, the student was in your talk. And not only that, Mark, but he took part in one of your exercises. So I was blown away. And they described him. I'm like, yes, I remember this individual. He was really sweet and full of zeal and excitement, just genuine, unbridled excitement, man. He was just totally, totally into it. And so I felt really bad. But you know what? A few minutes passed and I said, maybe I shouldn't feel so bad, because maybe there, obviously he didn't have many hours left. I think he died within a 24-hour period after that. So maybe I, or one of my stories or experiences, the one of many very colorful ones, gave him some happiness because he was challenged. So maybe there was something I said that made him feel like, wow, my future is going to be okay. Or if Mark was able to do this, maybe I could do something similar to that. So that made me feel a little bit better. Unfortunately, that's not going to be the same case for their parents, for his parents and his siblings, and for the rest of the school. They're really, really grief-stricken. So my condolences to the entire Colts Neck High School and to the family. Very, very sad. It's PRN.FM. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight. It's a huge weekend around here. We got Halloween tomorrow, Mischief Night today. I don't know if anyone in any adult in my life does anything of mischief. Maybe you have two or three drinks and you get pretty scary yourself. But to top it off, it's Marathon Sunday. And in New York City, Marathon Sunday is when the five boroughs become one. And when I say one, I mean one family. It is one of the most incredible things I've ever done in my life. And I've done some kind of cool things, memorable, that I think that would just and have changed my life forever. And I did New York City Marathon in 1995 and 1996. Feels like 5,000 lifetimes ago. But it seems like it was yesterday. And when I go online and see all my friends and what they're doing in their life, having kids, getting new jobs, and maybe doing something new with their life, trying a marathon, and maybe taking their marathon experience for the first time, applying it to New York City. And it's very, very exciting. Some people run because it's therapy. I call it my yoga. Exercise, running is my yoga. I don't do yoga, and I love it if I can do it, but I don't have time for it. So running is my yoga. So it's always interesting to find out what someone feels like before a marathon for the first time in New York City. And on the phone with me right now is Mary Waddell, and she's about to embark on her first New York City marathon. Mary, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. How about you, Mark?
Have you tapered back those miles?
I have. I've been tapering my miles. I am going to do my final run today.
Good,
two
good.
Miles.
Is that a big bowl of pasta in front of you right now?
Oh, yeah. You know it. I love my pasta.
Fantastic. So how are you feeling?
Very,
how are you feeling
excited.
Mentally?
I'm excited. I am nervous. There's a lot of last-minute planning that goes into it, but I have a great support team, as you know, and I'm just really excited. I'm excited to meet the people that I'm doing this with are the Arthritis Foundation. I'm not sure if I mentioned that to you, but this group of people are doing some amazing work, raising like a tremendous amount of money, and I'm just so proud to be supporting them.
And you were one of the top fundraisers?
Yep, I am. I actually had a goal to raise $3,000, and I'm at a little over $4,000 at this point.
Fantastic.
So
congratulations.
I'm really excited. Yay. Thank you.
Well, you know, it's a great feat on two matters and multiple matters, because number one, you're doing something very good and positive for yourself. You're a mother of three exceptional children. You have a business. And, you know, we always look for something in life as an outlet to make us feel, you know, obviously we all have stressors in our lives, but also to make us feel a part of something. And being part of a family, there's nothing better than that. But also you have your own identity, which is very, very important. And secondly, on top of that, that you can also parlay this into an organization that really is in serious need of funding.
Yeah, definitely. It's been very rewarding. You know, it's given me a great opportunity to, you know, help people to understand a little bit more about me. Like, they know that I love to run. They know that I'm always looking for, you know, a run and getting out there. And it, like you said, a great stress reliever. But a lot of people didn't know about me as far as that I also have arthritis. I think you knew that. But, you know, so this has been a great way to kind of shed some light on what the possibilities are and treatments out there. And, you know, that having arthritis you can still do all these things if you really put yourself out there and get moving, and the energy with the marathon, it's just, it's a great combination for me, like emotionally. It's going to be very emotional, very emotional.
Now, I imagine, Mary, a certain amount of exercise keeps arthritis at bay.
Yep, absolutely. And it's kind of one of those move it or lose it. You know, once I started feeling better and got running, I can't even tell you, like, what you were saying about how running is your yoga.
Mm.
Same. I love yoga, but running for me, the more stressful, the more busy my day, I get out there, I am a new person when I come home.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if I can inspire some other people to do it, I'm, like, thrilled. I have my husband who started running. He actually ran 10 miles with me the other day.
Fantastic.
Can I even believe it? And he's talking about doing his first half marathon this spring.
Good for him. Good for him.
Yeah. I'm excited.
And you know why? I really enjoy
excited.
It, too, because I used to do a lot of drugs in my earlier years, and so
I no longer
can do those. So the only thing I can really do that's legal is run, and I get free dopamine, and I won't get arrested.
True. It's true. Oh, my gosh. The
runner's high, baby.
You know it. The first time I did my first half marathon, I am not kidding, the runner's high that I had, it lasted a solid week. I mean,
really?
I have never had that feeling before.
You got some good dopamine,
then,
girl.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. So now, last November, I did the Philadelphia Full. That was my first full marathon. It was, like, so amazing. So I rolled right into the New Jersey Full in April. So this will be my third marathon. Somebody with arthritis is running 3 full marathons and 2 half marathons all within 1 calendar year. I'm just like, you know, and I also have to mention, I hit my 15 years smoke-free, no cigarettes for 15 years. That was this past 2 days ago.
What a great mile marker.
You know, it's this whole thing, the running, the marathon, like, how thrilled am I to be participating in this on Sunday?
Absolutely.
Where my old stomping ground, like, I just can't even believe what I'm going to be doing. And
all the
I
old
know
boyfriends you're going to be able to run by, and they're going to be so jealous. Look how hot Mary is. 3 kids later. Let me paint a picture for you, Mary, actually, and we're going to let you go after this.
Okay.
When you cross the 59th Street Bridge, it's going to feel like you're running up to the pearly gates, because all you hear are footsteps. You actually physically feel the bridge moving, which is kind of a little daunting. And all of a sudden it gets really, really quiet once you get up to the crest of the bridge and you start going down, and you're like, thank God for gravity. Legs don't slow me down now. Fail me now. So you start going. All of a sudden you're going to hear a very odd noise that you've never heard before. And it may take you, well, now obviously I'm giving it away, but it may take you, if I didn't tell you, like maybe 30 seconds or a minute to figure out what it is. And it's a slow, very slow building of a cacophony of sound of the First Avenue crowd roar coming to life.
I've heard that. Yeah,
and
I've heard that.
I just got chills explaining this, and I said, obviously, the last one I did was in 96, so it's been a few years. So it just empowers you, and it kind of solidifies. If you need more reasons to do it, not everybody is a runner, and no one needs to be a runner. Everyone has their own thing in life. But it just solidifies, wow, this is why I did it.
Yeah,
one of the reasons,
I
should say.
I am really, really excited. And my thing right now is, I know it's going to be so emotional. I know, like, what you're just described to me, I can't wait to feel that. But I also know, I said, oh, my gosh, I know I'm going to get choked up. So I'm getting my little inhaler. I've never used one before, but I am going to keep it in my little fanny pouch, because I just know, I know that this is going to be that amazing, that I just might possibly need a little something to carry me through those emotions.
Very good, Mary.
I'm so excited.
Very good.
Yeah,
and finally, I got to share a little funny story with you that, you know, everybody wants to high-five you. Kids, adults, grandparents, people in wheelchairs, and that's really great. It's very empowering. They really pull you through the 5 boroughs. But being visually impaired, you know, I was high-fiving people, And then at certain points in the races, I guess I would miss the signs. There are volunteers everywhere. They wear rubber gloves and they have petroleum jelly on there. So if you, obviously there's chafing involved. So I would high five and I'd be like, what the? And I'm like, oh.
Oh, good Lord.
So a few times that happened to me inadvertently. I'm like, what am I going to do with this? I wasn't chafing. I was like, how am I going to get rid of this? But I'm sure that won't happen to you. All the best to you, Mary. Congratulations
thank you so much, Mark.
Being an emperor for the Arthritis Foundation. Pardon me. And I'm sure you're going to do fine. And time, regardless of time, just go out there and have fun because that's
Absolutely.
What it's all about.
Thank you so much, Mark.
Break a
thanks
leg.
Thanks for having me on.
Take
all
care.
Right,
my
thanks.
Best.
Bye-bye.
Show's Insight on PRN.FM. Love to hear from you. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Well, a really big day yesterday for the LGBT community. Now, a lot of people don't know this because this news just broke yesterday. But the CEO of Apple revealed yesterday that he identifies as gay. Does that mean he's gay if he identifies as gay? Yeah, actually he does. He goes on to say that I am gay. But, you know, I love when people come out with powerful statements that are not just very clear. They're not succinct and to the point. You kind of have to, like, flip it around and pick it up and look underneath it. Are they trying to say this or that? But, yes, so he is gay. And I imagine with all the things going on with Apple, well, first of all, good for him for having the courage to come out at such a huge title in the world, because obviously Apple is a world-leading, dominating force, to feel comfortable to share his sexual identity that he identifies as being gay. You know, hats off to him, because it couldn't have been easy, especially with Apple. Obviously, they're releasing some new products in the last couple of weeks they did. But they're not doing nearly as well as they were 5 years ago, 8 years ago. The competition's catching up. But aside from that, I just think it's very, very important for everyone out there who is living a life of secret, even in the dark, that are intimidated. And I totally understand. No, I can't understand. I can kind of, in a morsel size, understand if you're living a life that is sort of a lie, where your sexual identity is one thing, but you're living and acting another life, whether you're married, single, thinking this is what your parents want, your brothers and sisters want. How could they respect me if I was gay? It's got to be very, very tough. So good for him. And I hope that empowers people within Apple to come out and be open. Obviously, you don't have to flaunt your sexual identity, but it's fantastic. And for corporations and companies, big and small all over, that make people realize that, hey, I am the way I am. But one thing I think Tim Cook, the CEO, is going to get a lot of flack for, that I don't have the exact quote in front of me, so please give me some slack here when I try to give you the words that he said. Something like, I'm so happy that God made me this way or understands the way I am. And I'm saying to myself, oh, why would he have to associate God with being gay? He's just asking for trouble. Don't do that, Tim Cook. You should prepare this maybe a little bit better. You understand that? I mean, he shouldn't have put the word God and gay in the same sentence. It just doesn't go over with many, many audiences, whether you believe in being gay or not, because there's a whole another world there with the religion. Well, we won't even go there right now. But I wish him the best. I think that it's pretty neat stuff. So did you catch SNL over the weekend? Jim Carrey's one of my favorite comedians, and I know he can be very annoying. But I really am impressed with the guy because of his vast, remarkable talents. And also the fact that he's publicly spoken about his depression. He's had struggles, like many people in the world. But certainly an actor of his caliber, one of the top Hollywood actors. Certainly one of the former top. Maybe not so much now, but certainly still carries a lot of weight in Hollywood. That he did a lot of great skits. And one of them was the, you know, the Matthew McConaughey commercial where he's driving a Lincoln? And the first thing I said to myself when I saw this spot run on the air probably 6-7 weeks ago is, why in the hell would Matthew McConaughey, at his star level, power, what he can command for a film and stage, Why would he possibly do a car commercial? And I think that's the whole reason why they did this skit, because here he is, Jim Carrey, posing as Matthew McConaughey, and he's trying to do his best, like, all right, a man's got to step back once in a while. I'm not even going to pretend I can do a good Matthew McConaughey impression, but you get the gist of what I'm trying to say. So this actually gets split into like three different skits throughout and interspersed throughout the SNL show. I didn't see the actual show together, but I saw the clips and highlight reel. And Jim Carrey does a bang-up job because they related to different topics that they're talking about throughout the show and or current events. And they keep going back to Matthew McConaughey. And it's really true. Like, why? What was his agent thinking, saying, Matthew, you know what? I think this is a really good move for you, especially for your career, because, you know, you driving a car that's going 5 miles per hour, talking about your inner self and how it's going to make you more powerful driving a Lincoln, is going to catapult your career. But yeah, I don't know. Lost in translation? I just don't get it. And also, Kate Hudson did something very good. There was a cinema award industry thing happening not too long ago. And she did a movie with Matthew McConaughey. What was it called? Fool's Gold? Something like that. A couple years ago. And apparently Kate Hudson was in Australia at the Great Barrier Reef when they were filming this. Literally filming this, right? And she got news that her divorce was final. She was married to, was it Chris Robinson? Black Crowes, lead singer. Very cool dude. I could see him. I don't know. I would never put them together. But so that's when she got the news that her divorce was final. So she was really bummed out. She was having a dark moment. So she does this impression of Matthew McConaughey where he then just pops up out of the water because I had to get certified in scuba. Pops up out of the water, spits out his regular. He's like, all right, Kate, let's go. It's all right down there. It's like a 1969 Chevy just waiting to be boarded. Something like that. And she just really did it justice. And all his Matthew McConaughey-isms, you know, just came flying out of her mouth. And it was pretty hysterical. So if you have time, and hey, who doesn't have time at work just to waste time and go on Google and Facebook, whatever your platform of choice may be, and find out exactly what those impressions were. Love to hear your input today. What's happening with you? 888-874-4888, as usual. 888-874-4888. So I got a text right here from someone who's listening out of Georgia about my talk that I mentioned a few minutes ago where the student died. And it's kind of a long text here, but saying that, yes, I should feel good about what I said and how I serendipitously invited that student to take part in my exercise and how I should feel good about making him feel good. And who knows, you know, if he had many more good things to experience after that. I hope so, because I think he came from a very, very good and loving, close family. So thank you for that actual email. Appreciate that. And someone also comments about Chris Christie's goof cancellation of Halloween in 2014 due to Ebola virus. And more importantly, how he has the gall to tell someone to shut up. And granted, you know what? This person may have been, who knows what their challenges were or experiences with Hurricane Sandy, Superstorm Sandy. But the thing is, you just don't speak to people like that. You just don't. And this guy really thinks he has a viable chance of being a runner to lead this great country of ours. All right. Sometimes it's great. Sometimes it's really great. Sometimes it's not so great. Anyway, that how could he be a world leader and like go to Russia, Germany, North Korea? Could you imagine that? With the lack of control, self-control, the lack of decorum, ethics-wise, I don't know. I just can't see it. And I'm all for understanding. It's kind of like music. Like, you know what? You don't have to like someone's music. For example, like Bob Dylan. Okay, bear with me here. I think he's a phenomenal musician, a lyricist. Can I sit there and listen to a whole album? Hell no. If he paid me to, maybe. But I respect the guy for his artistry, composer, his writing, you name it, his talents as a performer. So you don't have to like a politician or agree with many of their viewpoints or stances or platforms. But when someone of this caliber is seriously considering and or will announce soon that their candidacy for the United States is signed, sealed, and delivered, then you know you just got to shake your head and say, no, it's not because I just dislike the person, because this person does not have the goods. They do not have the means, the experience, and or the temperament, the vision, just the sheer vision alone to lead this country where it needs to be. And I think that's a very valid point because, I mean, we can't have somebody who just was the U.S. Attorney General, then the governor of New Jersey. And I'm sorry to get on a tangent on politics here. That's not what this show's about. But it just kind of ended up being that way a little bit today. But we had a lot of fun. But the bottom line is I just can't see it happening for a lot of different reasons. And you can totally disagree with me. Even if I liked the guy and agreed, listen, he got a lot of stuff done. And whatever it takes to get things done, I'm a believer in that as well. But still, you have to do it in a certain manner with professionalism and respect. But going back to our earlier interview today with Deb Johnny Roy, from Holla Back, I want to say that we weren't able to get to a lot of things because obviously due to her busy schedule, the executive director is on CNN Live now as we speak. Everyone is like manning all duties on the ship there, trying to get fulfill all the coverage and media requests. But the thing I'd like to say is that you know it's something that I don't think will ever change because people are who they are. And a lot of people, especially in a poor demographic, think this is totally acceptable within a certain means. Obviously, if you're going to really be raw, I'm trying to think of the best words to communicate what I'm feeling here, really demoralize someone, then that's a different story. But I mean, you go into neighborhoods and you see it all the time. And I don't think there's anything wrong with saying, and I do it sometimes, good morning. And I could say that to a man. Does that man feel violated if another man said to him, hey, have a good day. Hey, bro. Hey, dude. What's going on? Hey, my man. But if I say that to a woman, is that interpreted as I want to get to know her more? I want to sleep with her? I want to have an intimate conversation with her on the street? So there's a lot of different ways it can go. And I guess the psychology of it is maybe in a delivery and obviously within the words. Course what someone says, if it's degrading. I've actually witnessed some things that were said that are very funny. My wife, who very, very fortunately for me is quite attractive, she's told me some things guys have said to her that are hysterical. And one of them is very, very creative and unique and original. One of them is, I know what it was. She was in Ireland. Maybe she wasn't in Ireland, but someone with an Irish accent, a brogue, came up to her and said, and I'm not going to even try to do a brogue because I botched a Matthew McConaughey impression, so I'm not going to go over two here. But he says, you're in charge of a lot of beauty. You're in charge of a lot of beauty. Few amount of words, but I think that carries a lot of weight, man. And so did she. I didn't ask her what happened after that because it was before she met me. So I don't know if I wanted to find out the actual outcome of that. But I mean, hey, there's a time and place and delivery for everything. And I'm certainly for people spreading the word so harassment does not happen on the streets. Nobody should live in fear. That's one of the things I say to students and or adults when being bullied in the workplace or at school. No one in this world should live in fear. There are certain entitlements we all have in life, and being happy should be one of them. So fear does not fall underneath that umbrella. I'd like to thank my guest today from I Holler Back is actually the website, iHollerBack.org. iHolla.org is the website. Check them out. And Holla Back is the organization. She's Deputy Director Debjani Roy. Chris Christie, we didn't hear back from his office. A few phone calls. Casey Holford, one of the top producers here and creative director, made a few phone calls. We wanted to have him on and find out why he would tell somebody to shut up and sit down. All right, my friends, have a great weekend. If you're in the New York City area, do check out the New York City Marathon. All the best to Mary Waddell. She's going to kick some serious butt. I know she is. Love to talk to you next week. Until then, my name is Mark Farrell. This is Insight. And, of course, our show and podcast always live on the Insight page on PRN.fm. Have a great day.